This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Inside Story on BFM 89.9.
Good evening. This is Inside Story with Lynn. Tonight we're looking at political appointees and what would need to happen to end this practice. This comes as Datuk Seri Tajuddin Abdul Rahman has been removed from his post as Prasarana chairperson following recent remarks, and we'll be exploring the impact of political appointments, what checks and balances currently exist and what needs to change, and finally, asking a question: what are our expectations from leaders and politicians when they communicate with us, the people? Let us know what you think. Should we end the practice of political appointments to GLCs? Call us 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018 789 8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. This is Inside Story. All right, it is 6:07. Let's dive right in. Tonight we're talking, as I mentioned, about political appointments, political appointees. And this is something that's just, you know, on the mind today because the Minister of Finance has removed Datuk Seri Tajuddin Abdul Rahman as the chairperson of Prasarana Malaysia Berhad yesterday. He received his termination letter from the Finance Minister, Datuk Seri Tengku Zafrul Abdul Aziz. And this is following on after heavy criticism came his way on social media and in a variety of places, actually, for a press conference that he gave following the LRT collision near KLCC that left almost around 200 people injured, six of whom are reportedly in critical condition. And the tone, I think, of the press conference really came into question. And this was, for example, I think it's easiest to describe it just by hearing a clip. So this was when a journalist asked Tajuddin for his response to the public's calls for his resignation after he arrived at the scene only the next morning after the incident.
Yalah, you must know why. I baru habis petang tu satu tugasan dengan pihak untuk syarikat di Subang. Saya pun dapat tahu lambat apa yang berlaku. Lambat saya dapat tahu. Ya. Jadi pada masa itu saya pun dah prepare untuk vaccination today. I'm going to have my second dose today, you know. So walau macam mana pun, bila saya dapat tahu dah lewat, I made up my mind that I will come this first thing in the morning. Tahu first thing in the morning? Getih ke cakap putih? First thing in the morning. That mean how serious I am. How serious I am about this matter. So, pagi-pagi I dah turun. Pergi tengok masuk dalam terowong apa semua. Janganlah main, orang kata, cuba nak probok-probok. It's not good.
Something else that wasn't covered in that clip is when he was questioned about the incident, the LRT collision, he told the reporter that it was normal and that the two cars were together and they kissed each other, which is another thing that has made headlines. So as mentioned, following on from that, he was removed from his post as Prasarana chairperson. And that has also set off, I think, a whole new spiral, a whole new set of conversations. For example, following on from the sacking, Razlan Rafi, who is a Supreme Council member for UMNO, has then criticised, without referencing this incident, criticised Bersatu and GPS ministers for alleged incompetence, listing seven cabinet members whom he deemed ineffective. We've also seen questions arising once again about this issue of political appointees and the practice essentially of putting MPs into positions of, into GLCs, heading up GLCs. And I think, you know, this is a conversation that is so long running now within Malaysian politics, within Malaysian business. There are so many elements to it, including the fact that when you change governments, for instance, we see these changeovers again, what it means, the conflicts of interest that can arise from that. So that's something that we're going to be examining in the first half of our show. I'd like to know, though, what did you make of those comments in the first place? What do you make of his removal, Tajuddin's removal as the chairperson of Prasarana? And also, do you think that we need to stop the practice of political appointees? You can call us 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio. After this, we'll be crossing over to Professor Edmund Terence Gomez, Professor of Political Economy at the University of Malaya. Keep it here on Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Banish fraudulent maneuvers. BFM 89.9.
It's just about 6:13, and you're listening to Inside Story with Lynn. Today we are looking at the practice of political appointees and the impact of it, as well as what would need to happen if we wanted to end this. This is following on, of course, of the removal of Datuk Sri Tajuddin Abdul Rahman as chairperson of Prasarana, following on from recent remarks and controversy. We'd like to know your thoughts. You can call us 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. We are now crossing over to Professor Edmund Terence Gomez, Professor of Political Economy at the University of Malaya. Prof, thank you so much for joining us. Let's start with a 101. What is it that's led to political appointments being as common as they are, and who makes these decisions?
To understand these political appointments, we need to understand the history of the nexus between politics and business. This nexus goes back many years. It started really in an active way in the 1970s. In 1980s, when Mahathir became Prime Minister, and that's the time when we began to see also the mushrooming of what we call as government-linked companies. And as these government-linked companies began to emerge, what is important here is this point. Malaysia is a highly interventionist government, and when they intervene through a variety of mechanisms. Among these mechanisms are institutions like statutory bodies, Khazana, Kasada, sovereign wealth funds like Khazana. Then there is the publicly listed GLCs like Tenaga, Maybank. There are a whole slew of unlisted companies there and the multitudes. So when we talk about GLCs, we are talking about many different types of institutions. In each of these different institutions, you will find that the government, which has control of these different institutions, will make appointments. Who exactly makes the appointment is your question. So let me answer that question now. To answer that question, GLCs prevail at the federal level as well as at the state level. What that means is even among the 13 state governments, they have GLCs. When it comes to making appointments at the federal level, there are GLCs that are also controlled by different ministries. So if they're controlled by ministries, the minister appoints them. In many cases, the prime minister also has the prerogative to make appointments. This is particularly true of major GLICs like EPF, government-linked investment companies, GLICs like EPF, Khazana, KWOP, Tapung Haji. These are usually made by the prime minister. At the state level, it is made by the chief minister. So what we are seeing here is a colossal number of different types of institutions controlled by prime minister, ministers, chief ministers, and all of them have the capacity to make appointments.
Talk to us about how political appointments potentially affect the way companies are run.
With the government intervening in the economy in a big way, what this meant was the government now was a key actor in the corporate sector. If you look at the top 10 companies in Malaysia today, publicly listed companies, 8 of them are GLCs. Now, these GLCs are major players in the corporate sector, in key sectors of the economy. If you make political appointments there, then the chances are they may undermine the ability of these companies to perform in a professional manner. We cannot allow that to happen. This is particularly true when we talk about the current COVID pandemic. When the pandemic occurred, we went into a lockdown. What that meant was private firms could no longer operate. That is why Tunku Safrul, as finance minister, said he's going to use the government ecosystem. By that he meant the GLCs. And the GLCs did intervene in a big way. For example, the banks, they put a moratorium on loans. Tenaga reduced the rates for power supply. The telecommunications companies reduced the rates for telecommunications supply. So you could see that GLCs can play an active role even during times of crisis. In normal times, already they play an active role in the banking sector, as I mentioned, in power supply, utilities, transportation. But these companies, if they are to perform well, must be run by professionals, not by politicians. If you do appoint politicians, what do? They will use their influence to distribute contracts from these major institutions selectively. This can happen. And when they do that, then you will see the abuse of the system, which will lead to contracts not being implemented properly. The quality of the products will be poor, or you may begin to see the rise of what we call Alibaba relationships. Alibaba relationships are when you give a contract to a politician who subcontracts it to a businessman who gets the contract done, maybe even doing it properly, but it's still an Alibaba relationship. And there are cost overruns here. So there's a lot of wastage in the system. A final point. If you are a director of these GLCs, you can also make other directorial appointments. If you're a chairman, for example, you can make directorial appointments. You can make managerial appointments too. This is particularly true of unlisted companies. So I'm only talking just now about publicly listed companies. What about the whole slew, the millions we think, I'm exaggerating, thousands of GLCs out there, federal and state? When you appoint them as directors, politicians, they get a stipend. When they get a stipend, that is a huge cost burden on the government, federal as well, or state. And these companies can also be used to distribute contracts. And these contracts will normally be distributed to fellow politicians. So you can see here the voluminous amount of wastage that can occur in this GLC system if it is not well monitored. Unfortunately, that is exactly what is happening today. I fear also even during this time of crisis, this may be occurring.
And do you think these appointments affect public perception of the companies and what they do and accomplish?
That's a very important point, Lynn. The first company which comes to mind when we talk about this is 1MDB. 1MDB was a GLC. And look at what damage 1MDB did to Malaysia's reputation. Within the country, we've had a whole slew of scandals. The Felda scandal, the Mara scandal, the Tabung Haji scandal. The perception here in the minds of most people, right-minded people, is this. What is going on here with these major institutions? Tabung Haji, Felda, these are important institutions brought about to help the poor. And they are being abused by politicians in power. And these are not perceptions, mind you. These are realities. We have already seen it. It has occurred. And this is my question. In spite of these huge scandals, international scandals like 1MDB, and national scandals like Tabung Haji and Felda and Mara, why haven't there been any reforms of the sort one would expect when these scandals were exposed? Why do they still persist in appointing politicians to these major institutions? It shows you how important these institutions are within the political system as a means for dispensing appointments to politicians to keep them in a particular faction, as well as a means to use these institutions to distribute all kinds of concessions to the electorate as a mechanism to get the electorate to support them. After all, they play a huge role in society. If the government, if a particular politician controls them and he says that he is distributing it to them, the volume of support that politician and his party can get will be enormous. Here again, you see the abuse of these GLCs. So it's deeply embedded now, these GLCs, in the Malaysia's political system. And this is something that we need to look at and reform. But let me close on this point. This occurred during the Barisan National Government. The Pakatan government, before they came to power, promised us in their manifesto they will bring about change. They were 2 years in power. They didn't bring about any change. Now we have a Perikatan government in power. And Muhyiddin had promised to bring about reforms, including eradicating corruption when he first spoke as prime minister. But we are not seeing that either. So there doesn't seem to be any political will among politicians across the board in terms of wanting to reform this GLC system, because, as I said, it's just such an important tool as a mechanism to secure electoral support within the party as well as outside the party.
What conflicts of interest exist when we appoint politicians to head companies?
In terms of conflicts of interest, let me give you one example, and some people may disagree with me on this. Should the Prime Minister also serve as the chairman of Khazana? Khazana is our sovereign wealth fund. Should the finance minister also have responsibility over such sovereign wealth funds? Should there not be an arm's length relationship? This is just Khazana, and I'm talking about Khazana because it's a sovereign wealth fund. If you look at other institutions, I mentioned that the ministry controls GLCs. Let's take the Ministry of Rural Development. They control important statutory bodies, rural-based statutory bodies like SIDA, Katina. They do a lot of work on the ground in rural areas, which is where the electoral support is for most parties, given the gerrymandering. Now, if politicians are appointed to head, to be chairman of these institutions, surely that's a conflict of interest. These institutions were set up to eradicate poverty, to bring about rural development, to establish new industries in these areas. Are these institutions doing it? So I've now just given two examples. One is Khazana, where I think the Prime Minister should not be sitting as chairman of the board, and this can lead to major conflicts of interest, including because Khazana owns a whole slew of publicly listed companies, which can be abused if the Prime Minister so wishes. I've also talked about the Ministry of Rural Development, and I mentioned rural development because they control a huge number of GLCs through statutory bodies, deeply embedded in rural areas. These are all controlled by politicians. Should we allow that? Do we see abuse of power in these institutions? Yes, among the largest cases of corruption, you will find this in this particular ministry. So these are the examples of conflicts of interest that can emerge if you do allow this practice to prevail.
So do checks and balances then usually exist in order to mitigate the issue?
When the 1MDB scandal came about, that was one of the first things we were talking about. What kinds of checks and balances can be introduced in the system? Now, here's the interesting thing. When they discussed 1MDB and the lessons learned from 1MDB, they didn't discuss revamp of the GLC system. They talk about reform of political financing. Now, this is interesting because you can see the link now between control of GLCs and political financing. As I said, it's one mechanism to garner support. When you give an appointment to a particular politician, he gets a stipend from the GLC. What does he do with that stipend? That stipend normally is channeled back into the party. It's channeled for the party's activities. So here you see how the system works. You can see how the abuse occurs. Now, when 1MDB occurred, they talked about reform of the political financing. It didn't go very far. Najib didn't take it very far. He lost power. They talked about it under the Mahathir government. But even under the Mahathir government, when they were talking about political financing, and one of the issues should be how do we keep the GLCs out of the political financing system, the debate didn't go very far. They didn't mind talking about reform of political financing, but they didn't want to bring the GLC into the discussion. Or at least I didn't see it. Today, when we talk about the Pekatan government, let me remind you, when Mohidin took power, he said this: how do we get people to stay on our side? We give them GLC appointments. And as you can see, soon after the change of government, a whole slew of elected representatives, MPs, as well as state assemblymen, were given GLC appointments. If you're not given a ministerial appointment, or if you're not given a deputy minister's appointment, you were given a senior GLC appointment. So you can see now how important these GLC appointments are. While they are willing to talk about reform of political financing, even if they do go down there, they will not relate it to GLCs. They'll try and keep it out of the system. Why? Because it still remains as a major mechanism to fund political activities. It's become a major mechanism to secure factional support, if you like, to secure coalition support. So it is these issues, these realities that we're looking at now. That is why today, all the more, we need to insist on a proper reform of the GLC system in its entirety.
So in a forum organised by Berse, Pasir Mas MP and head of PTPK, Ahmad Fadli Shari, said he would be willing to give up his post, but only on the condition that it would then go on to be held by someone else from his party. Previously, Datuk Sri Ahmad Zahid Hamidi had also argued that appointing MPs to head GLCs is necessary because it ensures that the government's agenda is carried out. How can we address these statements and this mindset?
The statement made by the past politician clearly explains everything. If you give out these GLC appointments, give it to a fellow party member. that itself is making a very clear statement. GLC appointments, the spoils, so if you like, are being distributed, and they must be distributed along party lines. Otherwise, I will not give it up. He acknowledged that it may not be proper for a politician to be sitting as a GLC director. But he did not say, stop the system. He said, I'm an elected rep. I'll stand down. You can give it to somebody else in my party, but not another party. He is admitting openly how important these GLC's appointments are, directorial appointments. Because if I'm elected, I would like to give my supporters in my party positions. They help me get elected. What positions can I give them? I can give them GLC appointments. It's very lucrative. They get a monthly stipend. The volume of work is not very much, and that money can be used by them also for their own political activities as well as party activities. Why then go and give this to another party? Why give it to a politician from another party who will be doing exactly the same thing? When we talk about this system, what is very clear is when you talk about the need for money in a political system, we need a lot of money to run a political party. We need a lot of money for political campaigns. The GLC system appears to become an avenue through which they can raise money for their political activities, for their political campaigns, to give their supporters contracts, to give their supporters appointments. That's how the system has evolved. And that is why the GLC system is so huge. Let me remind you, Mahathir, when he was in the opposition in the run-up to the 2018 general election, he referred to the GLC system as a monster. He used the word. It is that huge. Even the government, the federal government, does not know how many GLCs there are in the system. They have made that admission. If you read the manifesto for Pakatan, they say that we have no clue how many GLCs there are in the political system or in the government system. Now, because it's such a shadow world, that's why it is so important for politicians to retain it. They can do what they want with this GLCs without it being made open in the public eye. The only GLCs that are in the public eye are the GLICs, that's like Khazanah, PNB, EPF, the seven of them, as well as the publicly listed GLCs. But the unlisted GLCs, the statutory bodies, the foundations, they are not there. That's a shadow world. And they would like to keep it in the dark as much as possible because that's where the real abuse is occurring.
Prof, thank you so much for joining us. That was Professor Edmund Terence Gomez, Professor of Political Economy at the University of Malaya, laying the groundwork for us to better understand political appointees and some of the issues inherent in that. After this, we're going to be speaking with Tricia Yeo from IDEAS to find out what we need to do, what we need to have in place if we wanted to address and perhaps dismantle the system. Keep it here on Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Brainy, fancy material. BFM 89.9.
It's 6:38 and you're listening to Inside Story with Lynn. Tonight we're talking about political appointments and the impact that this practice has had on our business and social landscape, and also what needs to happen if we want to curb it a little or put an end to it entirely. This is coming this conversation began because of Datuk Sri Tajuddin Abdul Rahman's removal from his post as Prasarana chairperson following recent remarks and controversy on the LRT collision. So we've been asking you for your thoughts. You can call us 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. Earlier on, we heard from Professor Terence Gomez about the impact of political appointments. Now we're talking about the kinds of structures and changes that we would need to have in place if we wanted to address this issue. On the line with us is Tricia Yeo, CEO at IDEAS, the Institute for Democracy and Economic Affairs, to talk about this. Tricia, thanks for speaking with us.
Hi, Lynn. Thanks for having me, BFM.
I wanted to start actually with a comment that came from a listener, Paul, who says, we can discuss the pros and cons of appointing political appointees, but no point as nothing can be done. All these years, it's become a norm. And I thought we could start, Tricia, with you addressing that statement. Do you think that that is fair or true? Has it just become a norm?
Well, that's a very cynical view, but I suppose that's what it's come to, right? In Malaysia, I understand where that view comes from, but I think that there's still room to push. For example, when Malaysia wants to adhere to international standards, the OECD is a really good set of guidelines, and IDEAS has actually followed a lot of the guidelines set by the OECD. So, for example, they recognize that GLCs are going to exist, right? GLCs exist in many, many countries, China, Vietnam included. But how do we treat them? How do we make them more professional? So I would say that there are incremental ways in which we can approach this. So the very hardcore approach would be to say that there should not be any political appointments at all. And of course, I would try to hold to that principle as well. And this should hold throughout, right, federal as well as state governments. But I think one incremental approach that we can adopt is to say that at least for the chair position, that should not be a political appointee, because that's really important. The chairperson sets the direction of the entire, you know, company, whether it's a GLC or a statutory body. And, you know, if you want to go through this traffic light approach, then let's just address the chairperson first. And then we talk about the board of directors, the memberships themselves, because I think to change it wholesale overnight, that might be quite a difficult thing for political parties to swallow.
And when we talk about the issue of transparency, when it comes to political appointments, what form would this take?
Well, IDEAS just recently co-published a report together with Bursay on how we can reform the appointments process of GLCs and GLICs. And one of the things that we proposed was actually to formulate a GLC Act. So the GLC Act, not only will it define the GLCs clearly, it will also regulate the appointment process of the chairman, president, and directors. And how the process could take place would be that the GLC Act will mandate, firstly, like what I said, what is a GLC? And then under that, there will be a list. And there would be a select committee of parliament that is given power to scrutinize the appointment process as a check and balance mechanism. And then I assume that then those GLCs under that list would report to the select committee on what it has done in order for the appointments to be done in a proper manner. And again, the select committee, the proceedings of this select committee should therefore be made transparently available on the parliament's website for the public to be able to download and read for themselves what the process was in the appointment process. So that I would say that would be a best practice and a good example.
Now, a lot of what we're talking about today requires political participation and political will. And we've seen time and time again that this has not necessarily been in place when it comes time to make the changes, when it comes time to have these conversations. Are you optimistic that it's going to happen in the future? Do you think that there is political will out there to change the situation?
I think sometimes we expect that the politicians and the parties are going to behave in ways that adhere to the ultimate good governance agenda, because that's what we expect them to do. And we, as you know, even in civil society and professional organizations, that is what guides us, right? That's what guides our very raison d'etre, a reason for existence. But I think to understand the way politicians work is that they are incentivized in different ways. And I think where we're at is to understand that those incentives can still be pulled on in order for them to make the changes necessary towards governance as well. So I see that if political parties can put pressure on each other, so in a way it becomes a policy competition to see who does better. But this will only resonate if the people are expecting and demanding for these changes to happen. If they can show these demonstrable effects, and this can also be shown to have some traction when it comes to the vote, so ultimately it comes to back to the ballot box, then I think this could be the right set of incentives for them to change.
The argument when it comes to GLCs and political appointees is that we have, of course, had appointees who were professionals, right? Who were technocrats, who knew what they needed to do, who were effective in the position. And so we have this message here from Rafik that says, regarding this issue, my own opinion is we should go for full meritocracy, but I also agree with the opinions of others that the GLC must have the ability to carry out the government's will, which means it must be someone who is aligned with the government. But political appointees are also prone to incompetence and corruption. Are there better alternatives to have someone with the ability to lead a GLC and the will to carry out the government agenda?
I think, it doesn't really matter. You don't need a political appointee in the GLC to be able to carry out the mandate of the government. You can still put professionals in there who are of merit. And I think they are fully aware, if it's a company, for example, that is fully owned by the Ministry of Finance or fully owned by any other ministry, I think it's very clear that, it will be carrying out the mandate of the government. Because ultimately, that's where that's where the paycheck is coming through, right? So you don't need a political appointee to do that. The problem about political appointees is that there is the element of conflict of interest. And so the question will be asked, is the person serving the political party interest first, or is the person serving the interest of the GLC in question? And, if you're a member of a political party, then I think the answer is quite clear.
So, you touched on this earlier, but I wanted to conclude with it. In essence, what do we need to have an effective oversight mechanism to keep political appointees accountable if we're not at that moment now where we're going to say we're doing away with them entirely?
So the question is, what kind of oversight mechanism can exist? Mm. I think having, actually, some countries do have a sort of an independent body that provides oversight on all GLCs in the country. Thailand has this, and this actually allows them to also set a direction. So they even have like a 3-year plan for GLC transformation in the country, and we don't have that right now. So we don't have an independent or an exclusive entity that's separate from the government or that's separate from the GLCs themselves to be able to set the direction of all GLCs or even know how many of them exist. So I would encourage that kind of independence to take place. And of course, hopefully by using that as a mechanism, then we can also institute some of the reforms that we're talking about. But I think we have to go for some low-hanging fruits first. So as I mentioned, I would push for removal of political appointees as the chairman to start with, and then we work on everything else.
Tricia, thank you so much for speaking with us.
Thank you for inviting.
That was Tricia Yeo, CEO at IDEAS, the Institute for Democracy and Economic Affairs, talking about the kinds of actionable steps we could have in place to address the issues that are inherent in political appointments. We are talking about this, of course, because of the removal of Datuk Tajuddin Abdul Rahman as Prasarana chairperson, following on the remarks and controversies surrounding the way that the LRT collision was handled. So we want to know, what are your thoughts on this? Should we end the practice of political appointments to GLCs? And also, what do we expect in terms of tone from our political leaders when they talk to us? Because that's what we're going to be discussing next with Erna Mahuni, sub-editor and columnist at Malay Mail. You can weigh in, call us 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. This is Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Bigotry-free Malaysia, BFM 89.9.
It's 6:50 and you're listening to Inside Story with Lynn. The story that we've been looking at today is broadly political appointments and their impact, what we need to do in order to mitigate some of the issues that exist within it. And we're talking about this primarily because of Datuk Sri Tajuddin Abdul Rahman's removal as Prasarana chairperson, following on recent remarks, controversial statements, just general questionable behaviour after the LRT collision. And so, to conclude, we wanted to look at this issue of tone and language, particularly when it comes to the ways in which our politicians, our leaders, speak to us during a crisis. If you'd like to weigh in, that number to call, 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. We are now crossing over for this to Erna Mahuni, sub-editor and columnist at the Malay Mail. Erna, thank you so much for speaking with us.
Okay, hello.
So we've seen a lot of backlash over the week towards Prasarana's now former chairperson, Tajuddin Abdul Rahman, for his handling of the LRT collision and his tone when speaking to the press and to the people. What did you make of this?
Basically, it was a matter of impressions. It did not look good when the Prasarana chairman only appeared for PC the very next day, when our very own transport minister rushed to the scene. And then there was the overall, how he carried himself during the press conference, where there was no sense of urgency. And he, basically, he did not act like a person at a crisis. There was no sense of reassurance. There was a decided lack of decorum. And if that's one thing that Malaysians really expect from their leaders, is a sort of, at least a standard of statesmanship. You know, we're very much about the whole adab thing. And it's something that is very much expected of our leaders. So you could say that the way Tajuddin Abdul Rahman carried himself did not suit the situation, or basically his rank, which made it even worse.
Mm. And this isn't the first time that we've seen politicians make questionable remarks, not getting the tone right when making public statements, even in a time of crisis. But based this time, at least, on the pushback, the petitions, do you think that our expectations for politicians or figures of authority have changed over time?
I think it's because Malaysians now have a lot more avenues to express themselves. Before, they had very limited channels. I mean, at most, you would see perhaps civil rights organizers or NGOs organize protests, but the average person would have a difficult time expressing their displeasure with certain leaders. Okay, besides, of course, the occasional letter to the editor. But now you have Twitter, you have Facebook, you have YouTube, you have all these channels where private citizens can either individually or collectively express their displeasure with leaders. And seeing the recent petition, I mean, I think it really underscored that people were able to organize online as one voice very quickly. I mean, all it took was just making a petition online and getting people to sign it. When in the times before the internet, that would have taken a long time.
I wanted to take a step back because while this is unquestionably a crisis, Malaysia also has been seeing its way through a lot of upheaval, right, over the last couple of years, particularly with COVID-19. And so ideally, what do you want to see from a spokesperson in a time or a period of crisis?
Basically, what Malaysians are looking for is reassurance. That's the very first thing. When something unexpected happens, whether it's a global pandemic or a train collision, they want a steady figure, someone to say, even if they don't rightly know, that everything will be okay. That is the absolute fundamental thing. You know, someone in charge who demonstrates that they are on top of things. And I mean, it's not exact. Crisis training and crisis communications, those are things that are very, very basic. Those are basics when it comes to the way public figures operate. And, you know, you want to see that responsibility. You want to see that accountability. You want someone who becomes the focal point and is able to carry, you know, it's a burden, yes, but it's something that you would expect someone at the top, whether it's a prime minister through a pandemic or a chairperson at the time of a major accident. You know, you want to see someone there who you can trust will guide you through the storm.
And how important is transparency and timeliness in situations like these? I mean, you referenced earlier the fact that he was on the scene only the morning after the event.
Yeah, basically, this is very much, I mean, it depends on the kind of crisis. But when it comes to unexpected events, I guess, of course, you will understand that, you know, even chairpersons are people. It's not something you expect, you know. I mean, I think that's one thing that Malaysia is generally really bad at. We're not good at contingency planning. We have this, I would call this magical thinking. We don't like to think about what is the worst that can happen, you know? So there's one, that's that lack of preparedness, to the, you know, the inability to, okay, the inability to accept possible negative outcomes, right? And in these situations, right, when you don't have that contingency planning, and it shows you have no idea what to do. You had no game plan. Okay, step A, step B, step C. So when you have that, but the funny thing was, you know, we had our transport minister, well, honestly, I haven't been very impressed by his performance since his taking over the role. But at the very least, he knew what to do. You know, he immediately showed up, immediately talked to the press, and he was doing what I think the chairman should have been doing in his position. You know, he was there. He was there on the ground. He communicated to not just the media, but also to the people, the staff involved. So at least you could see a familiar face, right? So you like it or not, you have to give him kudos for that, right?
Erna, we just have a minute left with you.
Okay.
But what else would you like to see from our politicians and leaders when it comes to communication? Because again, through the last year, we have seen a lot of missteps.
Okay. Basically, it comes to two things. One, training. I really think our leaders are very poorly trained when it comes to speaking to the media or making public statements. There's too much leaning on speech writers or rehearsed speech. But, you know, there has to be more training about communicating to the people as well. And the second thing, if there's one thing that's very much missing I'm not just talking about government, but generally public figures, they're not very good at expressing empathy, which is something that you really need right now in a time of global crisis and where people are full of anxiety and fears. You just want your leaders to at least give you the impression that they care.
Erna, thank you so much for speaking with us.
All right. Thanks so much for having me.
That was Erna Mayuni, sub-editor and columnist at Malay Mail, weighing in on this question of tone and empathy and communication from politicians and leaders in a time of crisis. This is capping off our insight story today on the subject of political appointees and basically Tajuddin Abdul Rahman's removal from his post as Prasarana chairperson. Keep those thoughts coming. You can call us 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. This is Inside Story.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.